Hello, everybody. Welcome back into Locked On Colts, per a Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sutter, and joined by our weekly guest on the show, George Bremer, the Indianapolis Colts beat writer for the Herald Bulletin. And Anderson, how are you doing today, George?
Good. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks again for coming on. I appreciate the time. And let's hit on the Colts game, because once again, it was a nail-biter for this team, George. 15-13 was the final score. Adam Vinatieri had to hit a 51-yard field goal with 20 seconds left. This team, I feel like, throughout the rest of the season, especially without Andrew Luck out there, and I know Jacoby Brissett's held it, done his own so far. We'll talk about that play as well, that play made in the fourth quarter later on. But I feel like this year's team is going to be almost like last year's Chargers team, where they won, it seemed like, every game by 7 points or less.
Yeah, I mean, seven games so far, they're all one-score games. There's definitely a pattern here. I think it's interesting that they've gotten there in different ways, though. I mean, a couple times Atlanta and Houston, they did pull away at points in that game, and then they didn't have that finishing kick in those contests, couldn't quite get the knockout blow, and they ended up being close. And then, you know, in some of the other ones, it's been more like it was on Sunday, just a slog throughout the game. This one reminded me a lot of, obviously, the Tennessee game in week two, but also I thought there were a lot of hints there of the Jacksonville game a year ago, the one they lost down in Florida 6-0. Just in the way that the defense was able to kind of take away T.Y. Hilton, and it took, again, as it usually does, a top corner in the league, Chris Harris in this case, going out, following him, had some extra safety help, but not so much that they couldn't keep track of everybody else on the offense. And I think, much like Jacksonville did, I think Denver was uniquely set up to defend this offense. Harris is able to take away Hilton, and then with that front, especially with Von Miller, they're able to get after Jacoby Brissett and not really give him the time that he needs to go through his reads. And so I think that combination and the fact that they were mixing up their looks, which is the part that I think was kind of similar to Tennessee, making him, you know, hold the ball an extra second and maybe not quite trust what he was seeing, all that together made it a really tough day for the offense. And I think there is some growth from this team, though, that a year ago, in a situation similar to that, they don't score a point. They lose an ugly game, and everybody's trying to figure out what happened. At least this time around, they find a way to win the game. And in the end, that's all that really matters.
Were you surprised, George, by how thoroughly it seemed like the Colts offensive line was getting beat on Sunday? I know in the past that probably wasn't every Sunday occurrence with how bad it was during the early part of Andrew Luck's career. But now with Quentin Nelson up front, you have Costanzo, Kelly, Glowinski, and Smith. I feel like that's the first time this season where we saw Jacoby Brissett really running for his life at a couple times at this point. He really tripled his rushing attempts and scrimmage outside the pocket in this one game, where it's like the Denver pass rush is getting there almost every time on third down.
Yeah, it was really not a good game at all for the offensive line. I think they're aware of that, especially in pass coverage. But they had their troubles at times in the run game as well. Ryan Kelly mentioned something about a lot of movement on that Denver line, and I don't think they were quite ready for that. Denver did some things that they hadn't seen before. And I think similar to Philadelphia last year, part of this too was the fact that you had a defense coordinator on the other sideline who's very aware of Frank Reich on a personal level. And I think he had a lot of an idea, a better guess, if you will, than maybe other guys might about what it was that Reich wants to do. And so I think he knew, you know, there were some curveballs he was able to throw out there, Vic Fangio, that probably caught Reich and Sirianni off guard and kept the offensive line off guard. And then when those things happen and you're not executing well on top of it, it can be a really long Sunday.
Yeah, Brissett was sacked four times, and like we mentioned, he had to scramble an awful lot to the pocket on Sunday. But let's talk about the running game for a second, George, because even though the offensive line had their worst game of the season so far, I think Marlon Mack, if he had a good game from the offensive line, I think he was well on his way from getting a 100-plus yard day. He had 19 carries for 76 yards, but I feel like the yards per carry, even though he averaged four, I feel like really a lot of those were from negative plays turned to positive ones.
Yeah, I think that was really kind of a hidden performance from him. You look at the numbers, and it doesn't really jump out at you, but if you watch the game, there were a lot of runs there where I thought he wasn't just getting what was there, he was getting more. You know, if he should have gotten three on a play, he was getting five or six. If he should have gotten none, he was getting one or two. And I thought it was a really good running day from him, a very patient day from him. I mean, you go back to the touchdown run, they score from 10 yards out. The vision on that run, the patience, knowing when to cut, where to cut, and get into the end zone at a moment when, you know, who knows how this game is different if he doesn't get in there. There were enough times that offense was struggling. If he doesn't score on that run, maybe they end up settling for a field goal on that drive. Any kind of – all kinds of things could have gone wrong. But I just thought that he did such a great job of showing the growth he's had as a runner. And that's something that they can build on going forward for sure.
Getting Jacoby Brissett now, George, how would you grade on a 1 to 10 scale how Brissett played on Sunday? Because it was kind of hit and miss throughout the game. He was doing what he had to. But then at the very end there, he made a very special play that we were all waiting for. Can Jacoby Brissett win a game when it's on the line for the Colts? And he proved that on Sunday with his throw to T.Y. Hilton, evading Von Miller, which would have been a safety. What was your thoughts on that play and his overall play?
Yeah, that play was unbelievable. And I think all of us on the beat have written about it a few times. You're probably going to see a couple more stories today if they're not out there already, just because Nick Sirianni went into some more depth on that play and really kind of gave another look at it. I think what's funny, and it's kind of in keeping with Jacoby's personality, he's the one that's least impressed and least talkative about this. You know, somebody asked him today how he got away from Von Miller, and he said, he let me go. And everybody just, you know, that's obviously not the case. But I think what it showcased most is just how strong Jacoby is. I think that's one of the things. Whenever you've got your quarterback, you're looking for things that separate your guy from everybody else's guy. And I think that's one of the areas he's absolutely elite with. He's 6'4", 238. He's such a big guy anyway, but he's so strong. And I don't know how many quarterbacks out there would have the strength to get away from Von Miller in that moment. And then it's not just that. Get away, get out into the clear, and then fire a strike to T.Y. Hilton on the sideline. And Sirianni was talking today about that throw, as incredible as the escape was, that throw was even better in his mind, because Chris Harris was in decent position. He could have made a play on that ball if you don't throw it exactly where it needs to be. And then T.Y. Hilton, of course, he's T.Y. Hilton, and he comes down with an incredible catch, gets both feet in bounds, and all of a sudden a game in which they were left for dead is very much alive. And obviously a penalty shortly thereafter, and Adam Vinatieri goes out and gets a field goal, and they walk away with a victory. I think that overall Jacoby showed some of the growth that he still has to make. And that play at the end absolutely shows why this team has so much faith in him and why there is, you know, such room for him to grow. But I think on the rest of the game, I think you saw a lot of what has caused him problems at times, and that is reading defenses quickly. You know, it's not that he can't do it. I just don't know that he trusts his read right now. He seems to, at times, not necessarily trust what he's seeing, have confidence in what his eyes are seeing. And then he holds on to the ball for a second or two too long. And you know, I think he's done a really good job, obviously, 14 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, with avoiding turnovers, protecting the ball. But I think at times, and I think it was evident at times on Sunday, he will be a little too risk-averse. He will not, you know, maybe take that big shot. And sometimes I think that the offense needs that to get a little life going. But that's a balance every week. And I think right now he's erring on the side of caution. And they're 5-2, so he's made the right decision more often than not. And he's shown again that, you know, when push comes to shove, he's got that ability to go out and make a play and put the team on his back.
Peloton is offering a limited-time offer. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great credit workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED, LOCKED, to get started. As a true football fan, you already know just as sure as the season change, hopefully Jacoby Brissett will keep the Colts in the game. Every week in our favorite Gridiron Warriors put their skills to the test, so aren't you doing the same? We're almost halfway through the NFL season, so now is the time to get off the sidelines and get in the game with MyBookie. MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all your favorite pro and college football action every weekend. They always have the most up-to-date lines and the most prop bets of any sports book on the planet. So if you're going to go bet this season, do the smart thing with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. Pick your locks for the week, put them in together, one parlay bet, and when they all come through, the rewards will be huge. And if you're tired of watching the games from your couch with nothing to gain, MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back in the game. The best part is if you join now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. That's right. If you post $100 in, they'll give you $100 back. That's double your initial deposit you can use on all your favorite picks. Use promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON to double your cash and visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid.
I've been trying to think of a comparison for Jacoby Brissett, just the way he plays, George. And I feel like maybe a conservative Ben Roethlisberger makes sense here because just the way he can move around the pocket and the way he just throws guys off. Now, we've seen that a lot over the last couple of weeks now. Is that one of the rare traits that we're seeing as far as Brissett being a starting NFL quarterback? Like, you don't see many quarterbacks do week in, week out what Brissett can do in the pocket as far as just the way he can just throw guys off him like that.
Yeah, his ability to get out of the grasp and you know, obviously when you do it to Von Miller, a lot of heads are going to turn. But as you mentioned, we've seen it the last probably 2-3 weeks, pretty common. That it's very – I think either Sirianni or Reich one actually compared him to Ben Roethlisberger in his style of play. I think it's a very good comparison just in terms of the way he plays within the pocket and then having enough – he's an interesting guy because he's incredibly athletic. I don't think anybody would question – his athleticism. He was an outstanding basketball player in high school, had some Division I offers in that sport as well, but he's not especially quick. And so I think you see when he gets that strength and he's able to use it, you see him then use the athleticism to get out wide. You know, this isn't Deshaun Watson flying around the field and you know, making defenders miss. This is more of a tank, you know, and I think it's interesting to watch. I think it's something that does separate him, and I think it's something that, you know, a lot of defenses have commented on it over the course of the year, just how hard it is to get this guy on the ground and how big an impact that is for the offense in extending plays.
Moving on to the defense now, George, I think it was another great performance from them. I know Rocky Assin had a really rough day, 5 penalties, but a rookie cornerback, I expect one of those bad days to happen, and hopefully that's just the one bad day he's going to have this year as far as that many penalties. But I think the defense really stood up when they had to. The day when an offense was just not generating any yardage, any kind of field position, the defense and Darius Leonard especially, I think he had a really great game himself. They really continue to gel right now, and I'm kind of liking the way this defense is starting to click a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I was talking with Anthony Walker after the game, and I think it's easy to sort of forget how young this defense still is. At times this year, and it happened again on Sunday, they've had 6 rookies on the field together in certain packages and in certain situations. And I think it's easy to come into the year and think, well, they finished the year strong last year. They're going to pick up right there and build on that right away. And that didn't happen. And a lot of that is there's a lot of new pieces, a lot of moving pieces. Even though there's the same coach and the same scheme, I think even within that scheme, you see them doing different things. They're obviously playing man more and more. They switched back to man during this game. You know, there's a learning process still. There's a growing curve. And I think that's what you see. And he sort of agreed with that you're starting to see this group, the 2019 defense, grow together and kind of discover its own identity. I don't think things like Jabal Sheard coming back and being healthy, that doesn't hurt. You know, that's another piece to this. To me, the most impressive thing about these last 3 weeks and how well they played, and granted, Denver's offense is nowhere near Houston and Kansas City. They don't belong in the same conversation. But they've done it 3 straight weeks with at least one major contributor in the defensive backfield not there. You know, Malik Hooker against the Chiefs, Kenny Moore against the Texans, and then Pierre Desir this week against Denver. And that's not an easy thing to do. I don't know how many teams could have that situation, a different top defensive back out for 3 straight weeks and have the kind of performances this team has had. A lot of that goes credit to that front seven. The pass rush has been outstanding the last 3 weeks. As you mentioned, Darius Leonard's been great. And I think as they get those guys back and they get healthy, this is a defense that should just continue to improve.
Have you heard anything, George, this week? Have you had the chance to speak with either Matty Eberflus or Frank Reich about what happened with Quincy Wilson on Sunday? Because Marvell Tell, the third from USC, the fifth-round pick, he played a lot more snaps, his first real action on defense this year. And that's a good thing for the rookie, but I think it's a weird little note that happened on Sunday with Quincy Wilson. And this is kind of the second time now in the first 3 years of his career where he's been a rare DNP for some reason during the Pagano era, and now this time on Sunday. Did you hear anything from Reich or Eberflus about why that was with Quincy Wilson?
They've both been asked, and they both really haven't answered. It's the giving answers, but it's vague. It's it's your typical coach speak right now. We do what's best for the team. We're going to play the players we think give us the best chance to win. Reading between the lines. So much of this coaching staff, and they've said that from the beginning, so much is based on the way you practice each week. And so I don't think that they like the way he's practiced recently, you know. And there are some other factors. I mean, there are things, special teams play a role into that. Tell played more on Sunday on special teams than Wilson has all year, for instance. So there is some other element of that as well. Specific roles, I think a guy like Shaquille Taylor's up because they want to know if Kenny Moore goes down at this point. They feel better with Taylor as that slot nickel guy than they do with Quincy. So, you know, you lose a spot there. Then you lose a spot to Tell on special teams. Then the safeties are healthy coming into the game. So his versatility to go and play back there wasn't necessarily as big as it was in previous weeks. So I don't think it's any one thing. I think it's all of that. You know, as they get healthier week by week, they have to look at the matchups. They have to look at who they want in given situations, how they want to use guys. And so I think you're going to continue to see some surprises like that. And, you know, yeah, I think in the end evaluation, it doesn't look good for Quincy going forward. But I also think that this is a team where next week or the week after, he could be out there and he could make a big play and help this team win. It's sort of the nature of this roster and the way they use it.
Yeah, Deion Kane was also a DNP, but I think this is – we're kind of going to count this as his rookie year. He missed all of last year, his ACL injury. I think it has been a slow transition so far, maybe struggling with that. But Quincy Wilson, George, just one more point on him. Do you think maybe he's on the way out after this year? Because it just seems like if the Colts, especially if they draft another cornerback in this draft, which I feel like is a real possibility at this point, do you think Quincy Wilson may be one of those guys like Hassan Ridgeway last year where Chris Bauer during day three of the draft just trades him away at this point? Because it just seems like something's not clicking here.
Yeah, something's not clicking. I think he's definitely trending in the wrong direction. And we saw it before he got benched. I mean, guys like Shaquille Taylor were coming in basically off the street, coming in on Tuesday and getting more snaps than him. And that was, you know, a red flag there. And now moving forward, yeah, I think depending on the moves that they make, and I agree with you, I think there's a very real possibility they'll dip back into the cornerback pool in the draft. And yeah, I think that his days absolutely could be numbered. But I also think that that's kind of what I was talking about earlier. I think this is one of the things about this staff and this front office, that there are no absolutes. You know, it's still on him. If he comes out and he has the best week he's had in practice and he finishes this year strong, you can change a lot of minds. You know, I don't think this is a team that necessarily puts a guy in a doghouse and forgets about him. I think you kind of get out of this roster what you put into it right now with Reich and Ballard and Eberflus and Sirianni. The way they handle things, you kind of get what you earn. And so I think the ball's really in Quincy's hands.
Moving on here to the trade deadline, George, Quincy Wilson obviously didn't get traded. It just ended about an hour ago. The deadline passed, and no surprise the Colts did not make a trade here. With $40 million cap space and a lot of picks, a lot of intriguing picks, especially that Redskins pick in round two, I feel like a lot of national writers were expecting the Colts to make a move here to help their playoff push out, maybe try to challenge for the top of the AFC here. But I think if this goes to show you, George, or really anyone listening out there, if Chris Bauer had $40 million in cap space and these picks and still didn't trade for a guy at the deadline, probably the last team is going to have a lot of this cap space because there's going to be a lot of re-signings this offseason. I feel like maybe this is the year, or really the year, that shows that Chris Bowd's really not going to be a trade deadline kind of guy.
Yeah, I don't think that's his style. I mean, if you look at those picks, if you look at the deals that did go down and historically the ones that do at this time of year, what is going back to teams? Draft picks all the time. And so, you know, if somebody wants to maybe talk a sixth or a seventh rounder, then I'm sure he'll listen. But he, you know, I've heard a lot of people in the last couple of weeks when they're throwing out, will we get this guy, will we get that guy, the questions that you get, the answer to me all the time is he values those 2 through 4 picks a lot more than most fans and even probably some of the media do. In Chris Ballard's mind, that's where the roster's built. Those 2 to 4 guys, that's your depth. You get a few starters in there. You know, and when you look at it, the time that he's been here, the guys that have come in those rounds, Darius Leonard, Marlon Mack, Kari Willis this year. You know, those are important picks for him, and that's generally the range where these deals are being made. I don't think you're going to see him be real excited about being a part of that.
Do you feel like – I know a lot of people mentioned maybe pass rusher as an option. I know Jason Lockenfor of CBS mentioned that Ryan Kerrigan might have been an option before the deadline. I don't know if that was really true or not, but the Colts may be dipping their toes in the edge rusher market. Do you feel like Ben Banigou and his impact on Sunday gave the Colts confidence that they don't need to go shopping to replace Kamoko Touré this year as far as his – end?
To some extent, you know, I think again, the cost is probably a lot of that. I mean, when you hear at least the reports that are coming out from other places, Kerrigan probably not a guy that the Redskins really wanted to deal. So I'm sure that price would have been really extravagant. And then the other name that you heard a lot attached to Indianapolis was Derek Wolfe, who was obviously here with the Broncos on Sunday. And the same way, you know, I think it probably has much to do with compensation going back as anything else. But that being said, I think Banigou is a guy that has shown flashes. And that's – Eberflus was talking about that today. He feels like Banigou has shown his potential, and he thought on Sunday in particular he looked like the guy that they drafted out of TCU. Now they just want to see that more consistently. And I think that's sort of the nature for everybody in this business, right? I mean – you go out and you have a good game, and then the question is, can you back that up? Can you be that same guy every week? And that's what they're trying to find out about Banigou now, but there's no doubt he's got some of the raw tools necessary to make an impact in this league, and he definitely showed that against the Broncos.
Moving on now, George, the Colts are 5-2, and looking ahead, I feel like this team has a chance to make a run, especially these next two games, because you play the Steelers on Sunday, then the Dolphins the week after that. The Dolphins – feels like a guarantee win at this point with how they're trying to tank the season for Tua Tagovailoa. But how important is it for this Colts team, especially with the Ravens playing the Patriots Sunday, the Texans playing the Ravens as well in a couple weeks, if they can win these next two games to create the separation, not only atop the division, but possibly for the first round bye?
Yeah, I think that's what was such a big deal about Sunday, you know, letting a game slip away and finding a way to win it and get that W and move on. Because coming into this stretch, you know, these three games in particular – were games that they're all winnable games, Denver and Pittsburgh and Miami, and it is that chance to get that separation. And you look at the division right now, all four teams won on Sunday. And I think top to bottom is a game and a half difference right now. Nobody has a losing record. Jacksonville's feeling really good with the way Minshew's playing, and we know that defense can be dominant on any given day. Tennessee, I think, got a little boost with Ryan Tannehill coming in and playing under center. We'll see if they can continue that momentum. But all four teams, I think, in the division right now feel really good about where they're at, feel really good moving forward. And so for the Colts, this is a stretch that's incredibly important. You got to pick up these wins that you should get. You know, you drop one of these, and now all of a sudden you're looking back over your shoulder at a really tough divisional race. And I think that's something the Colts are aware of. They understand that there's a chance to get a little bit of separation right now, and I think it's absolutely critical to take advantage of it.
Looking at this Pittsburgh game a little bit more in depth, George, were you surprised when you saw the lines come out today that the Colts not only – they're not really even favorites in this game. It's a pick 'em game, so the Colts and the Steelers are even per Las Vegas. Is that surprising to you as far as the Steelers were a team last night who was struggling with the Dolphins? They were down 14-0 to.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised about that because I don't think nationally there's still not a whole lot of respect for the Colts. I mean, you hear – people talking about being 5-2, but there's only a +7 in the point differential. People are pointing to that right now, the fact that all seven games have come down to the wire. And then, you know, it's an ugly game on Sunday, and people aren't going to watch that one and come away thinking that this is a juggernaut by any means. Pittsburgh's always a tough place to play. They've shown that again and again. Even though the Steelers are 3-4, they've been competitive. They're just a couple plays, really, from being 4-3. That Ravens game, who knows how things could have ended differently in that one. It goes to overtime. There's a turnover. The Ravens kick the field goal to win it. So it's not like this is a Pittsburgh team that's struggling to stay alive. They've had their bad moments this year, but so have the Colts. So, you know, I don't think it's surprising being on the road and in that environment against a Steelers team that seems to be gaining some confidence right now. And most importantly, when it comes to things like lines and that sort of thing, Steelers just have more of a national brand. People and fans outside of this market are probably going to look at them with a little more confidence than they do Indianapolis in any given season.
Now, looking, I think this game is going to be really interesting, George, because I feel like this could follow a similar script to what we saw on Sunday here. Jacoby Brissett maybe struggles here in this game. It's going to be a tough environment. I don't know the weather is, but I feel it's going to be like a really cold, I imagine, game in Pittsburgh right next to the river there. Do you feel like this game could be one where it's a slow, grinded-out game like we saw on Sunday?
Oh, absolutely. I think that that's exactly what the Steelers are going to try to make it into. That's the way they've been playing most of this year. That defense, much like the Colts defense, seems to be gaining confidence every week, growing a little bit more and more together. And so I think the Colts are going to need that offensive line to show up and play a much better game than it did on Sunday. And I think you're going to go back and lean on Marlon Mack again. You know, like you said, I thought he had a chance to have a really, really big game on Sunday if the guys around him had played a little bit more solidly. And I think they need to take advantage of that. Their best chance probably on Sunday against Pittsburgh is to get Mack hot, let Jacoby make a big play here and there to keep the defense honest, and then hope the defense continues to play at the level it has the last three games.
What would you say, George? I know you mentioned Marlon Mack in the running game there. What are your other biggest keys to this game on Sunday? Because I feel like this, when you look at the schedule here and the upcoming schedule for the Colts, it gets a little tougher in the November, December parts. I feel like these, like you mentioned, these next two games, and I feel like Pittsburgh is one of those games. It's a trap game for sure, but you can't afford to lose it. So what are your other main keys?
Yeah, well, I think every week you talk about turnovers and trying to avoid that. The Colts have generally done a very good job of that, but this week, I think it's as important as it is at any time. Devin Bush has been incredible, just knocking the ball out, you know, getting forcing takeaways over there for Pittsburgh, and you can't let that happen. This is one of those games. It looked like on Sunday for a while that fumble late by Brissett was going to make a difference. Defense came out, got a stop, kept them in the game, but that's the sort of thing that you absolutely have to avoid. I think if they turn the ball over a couple times and give the Steelers a short field, that could wind up being the difference in the football game.
I'm going to go, George, for this Sunday, I'm going to go 24-20 Colts. I think it's going to be maybe even closer than that one. I think it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, last possession, like always with this Colts team, it seems like this year. Might be eight straight games if they do it again on Sunday as far as a one-possession game or less. What's your prediction for Sunday, George? I think the Colts come out of Pittsburgh with a win.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really down the wire as well. I think it's going to be another late game. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think you're going to see something very similar to what we just saw on Sunday. I really do. I think Pittsburgh's going to try to make this game a slog. And I wouldn't be surprised if something like 13-10 and the Colts walk out of there with a really tight white knuckle win again.
Wow. Yeah, that would certainly be a slugfest for sure. And I think that if the offensive line comes to play and that's the kind of score, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of Marlon Mack on Sunday and a lot of trying change of possession and really chunking that time down a little bit. But George, appreciate the time as always. You can follow him on Twitter at GM Bremmer. You can read his work over on the Herald Bulletin. As always, George, talk to you again next week.
No problem. Thanks a lot.